Well, thank you very much. We are delighted to be here on this absolutely magnificent campus. I have to say, we are just awed by what has been accomplished here at the new American University. The buildings are superb, and you have just a wonderful place to be students. So we envy you your opportunity. Normally, when we give a presentation, we start by showing some images, and then we have a question and answer period. We don't seem to be prepared to show many images today. So, as Lisa Anderson said, we're going to be a bit more informal. We'll each give a brief introduction into what we have been doing, and then give you a chance to ask any questions about traveling and living in space or modern developments in astrophysics that you may have and have never had an opportunity to ask. So, as you heard from the introduction, both Bob Williams and I started our professional lives as astronomers, and both of us became interested in astronomy as young boys. We diverged in 1978 when NASA announced that they needed a new generation of astronauts to fly on the space shuttle, which was being prepared for its first flight at the time. I had always been fascinated with the idea of space flight, and perhaps it was that interest in space that attracted me to astronomy. It's hard to know. The early astronauts were all military test pilots, and that never seemed like a realistic career for me. But when NASA announced that they wanted for this new group of astronauts, not only test pilots, but also engineers and scientists and doctors, I thought, well, I'll give it a try, and I was fortunate enough to be selected. On my first space flight, I had the privilege of putting on a spacesuit and going outside into the vacuum of space to repair a broken satellite. And that was probably one of the reasons why, after the Hubble Space Telescope was launched in 1990, and it was discovered that it had a serious problem with its optics, and we needed to mount a rescue mission, I was selected to be one of the crew. I'll just remind you that the ability to put a telescope above the Earth's atmosphere, where the vision of stars and galaxies would not be blurred by the motion of the air, has been a dream of astronomers since the beginning of the space age. And we had had several small telescopes in space, but the idea of Hubble was to actually put a large telescope, 2.4 meters in diameter, and not only would it be put above the atmosphere, but it would be designed so that, just like telescopes on the ground, as new technology was developed for the detectors to be put at the focus of the telescope, astronauts dressed in spacesuits would be able to go and exchange old instruments for new instruments, continually improving the sensitivity of the telescope. And of course, if something broke, we would hopefully be able to fix it. Well, that was the problem that we found ourselves in after the optical problem was discovered. Hubble could not focus properly. I'm just curious, how many people here, hopefully most of you, but how many people have heard of the Hubble Space Telescope? Raise your hands. Most of you. That's very good. So, a lot of you have heard the story, and I won't try to tell it as a suspense story, but it was an absolute disaster, because this was a telescope that was supposed to revolutionize the study of the universe, and instead all it could produce was blurred images. It's hard now, after the incredible success of Hubble, to recreate that atmosphere of despair and actually outrage. There was public outrage. How could NASA do something like this? So this repair and rescue mission was absolutely critical, and as I said, I was fortunate enough enough to be selected to be on the crew. It was a great responsibility. We trained extensively. We spent about 18 months, including about 400 hours underwater, which is where we practice using our spacesuits. And in December of 1993, we went up and, as all of you know, hopefully, were completely successful in restoring the Hubble telescope to its full capability. And the rest, as they say, is history, because in the 15 years following that, the discoveries made by Hubble have revolutionized our understanding of the universe and have caused astronomy textbooks to be rewritten many times. We have, since our first rescue mission to Hubble, three other crews have gone up to continue to improve the capabilities of the telescope. And in fact, in the middle of the month of May of this year, a fifth and final, probably, repair mission will go up. And when they finish installing two new instruments and making a lot of repairs as well, Hubble will have a sensitivity 1,000 times better than when it was first put in orbit. So it's just been an extraordinary story, and I'm now going to turn the microphone over to my colleague Bob Williams just to give you a brief introduction without pictures of what Hubble has meant to our understanding of the universe.
Thank you. Let me reiterate, we do plan to show you some PowerPoint presentations and DVD of the Hubble telescope, its repair, and the science that it's produced. Let me say several things. First of all, Jeff and I don't plan our extemporaneous remarks, and it's interesting that he started off by saying the same thing that I was going to say to you, and that is, well, first of all, in my case, I've been a professor for 45 years. I love students. It's great to feel the energy in here and be here with you to talk. Also, we, on this trip, have just come from Dubai, Emirates. We've been to several places in Egypt, and I can tell you, after being on this campus for just a little time, you're very fortunate. This is a great campus, it seems to me, and you have really excellent visionary administrative people and faculty, and so you should know that. In my case, I became interested in astronomy when I was 12 years old. I grew up in Southern California, just outside of Los Angeles. At that time, as part of the California state educational system, everyone in the seventh grade was required to take a science course. I knew nothing about science at that time. I grew up in a large family. In fact, it was an immigrant family. And I liked football and baseball and basketball and played it. And in this science course, we spend 3 weeks on a variety of science topics: geology, botany, chemistry, physics, astronomy. And when we got to astronomy is usually taught very commonly in the same order. That is, you start off with the scientific instruments that we use, telescopes, and then you work your way out of the solar system and the galaxy. And about the fourth day of this particular unit, I remember the teacher started talking about planets, and so I was, you know, curious, and I saw a picture of Mars. And it said there in the booklet that here was this planet that was like Earth. I didn't know there were other planets. Planet like Earth. People had speculated there might be life on it. In fact, at this time, and this was more than 50 years ago, there was still some suggestion historically that there had been canals on Mars. I was fascinated. My life changed forever that day. I was so excited to know about all of this stuff that I went home. I couldn't sleep. So I went into my mother's sewing kit because there was this little picture of Mars, and I took a magnifying glass that my mom used for it to school the next day so I could try to see, if I could see canals on Mars. And of course, all I saw were a bunch of dots. But the point is, I became an astronomer that day, and I went to Berkeley, got my undergraduate degree, then University of Wisconsin, got my PhD, then spent 20 years at University of Arizona, as the provost was saying, as a professor there before wandering around and doing some other things, all in astronomy. There was never a day in my life since I was 12 years old when astronomy wasn't one of the most important parts of my life. Never changed my major. All of my friends were changing their major, poli sci, chemistry, this and that. I stayed an astronomer. Bob Williams, in fact, it's in the high school yearbook there in Ontario, California. Bob Williams wants to be an astronomer. Well, I are one. So, what's to say about astronomy? I don't know, but it looks, we're getting close to getting going. We're asked a lot of questions. Well, we're going to have you ask us questions. We're talking too much. Maybe I should just cut it off and let you ask questions. I want to say one thing. Science is not a bunch of facts. It's a process. To me, what is important about science is not all of the discoveries. It is the attitude that one adopts in trying to make those discoveries. An attitude that I personally find is too often missing in all of us, and even in myself at times, one of openness, one of willingness to accept facts that you are not predisposed to believe. Frequently in my lectures, I start off with a quote from Simon and Garfunkel. I am just a boxer, but the poor boy remains. A man hears what he wants to hear and disregards the rest. Each one of you should realize that that is within you, and it is damaging as far as our relationship with ourselves and other people. What science forces upon us is these facts that we do not want to accept. It is important that you keep an open mind to such facts, because that is the optimal way of establishing good relations with other human beings. That is essential. If there's any other, no other point that I get across today, it is that. That is the value of science. Yes, it has produced discoveries that allow magnetic resonance imaging, hybrid crops that are resistant to drought, superconductivity levitated trains that go 500 kilometers a second, and fiber optics telecommunications. Great stuff, applied science that's necessary for life. I tell you that the attitude that a pure science like astronomy forces upon us, because it was at the center of the first great scientific revolution, the Copernican Revolution, right? Aristotle said the Earth's the center of the universe. 2,000 years in Western society, we didn't believe it. It was Copernicus who studied the motions of the planets that forced upon us the fact that this was incorrect notion. Was that easily accepted? No. Roman Catholic Church opposed it. People were put to death for believing that the sun was the center of the solar system. Things haven't changed. Second great scientific revolution has been the Darwinian Revolution. I think everyone agrees now the sun's at the center of the solar system. It took over a century for that scientific revolution to be consummated. Darwinian Revolution is still going on, and particularly in my home country, very serious debate about it. One should remain open to new ideas.